This is the Crimecasters Network with Alicia Safias and Ronnie Dahl. Two rogue reporters breaking newsroom rules to take you behind the crime scene tape.
The case we have for you today, Crimecasters, is that of a missing mom, a family's dark secrets, and a daughter's desperate quest for answers.
Alicia, sadly, Katie Scarcello's journey to find her mom is one so many other families share. According to NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, over 600,000 people go missing in the U.S. every year. That number to me was staggering.
Shocking.
And while many are found safe, tens of thousands remain missing for more than a year, including Elizabeth Dawn Land.
Elizabeth grew up near Almont, Michigan, a quaint village in Lapeer County of about 3,000 residents. It's a farming community, and she got pregnant with her first daughter, Katie, at a young age. Then she met Dean Land. They got married. Elizabeth, or Liz to her family, was happy. She and Dean had three kids together, all boys.
But the happiness began to fade. Liz started partying, and her occasional drug use became a habit. Soon, her life spiraled out of control. As the drugs took hold, her marriage to Dean began to crumble. He filed for divorce, and Liz lost custody of her kids.
By this time, Liz was fully addicted to heroin. After hitting rock bottom, she went to rehab, she got clean, and kicked her drug habit. It was hard, but she did it for her kids because she really loved being a mom.
Once released, Liz went to live with her mom and her stepdad, but she soon discovered life outside the safety of the rehab clinic was a dangerous place. According to sources, Liz's mom, Jeannie, was also an addict, and Jeannie's husband, Michael McGoy, whom Jeannie married in 2003, he was a drug dealer and a pimp. According to Genesee County Court records, McGoy has a criminal history, including a 2002 conviction for maintaining a drug house.
On February 26, 2009, just a few months after being released from rehab, Liz's mom filed a missing persons report with the Flint Police Department. Jeannie told police Liz left their home on Mackin Road to meet a friend at a nearby bar, a bar in a neighborhood known for drugs and prostitution, an area where young, troubled women go missing, women like Liz.
Liz's daughter, Katie, was a child when her mom disappeared. She's now an adult and a mother herself. I recently spoke with her about her mom's disappearance and her unrelenting search for answers.
You're listening to Crimecasters Network.
Katie, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us about your mom?
Oh, she was a beautiful woman, loving. She had her own bad habit that kind of put her in the position that she was put in and caused her to sadly go missing. But she's very missed by lots of, she was loved.
Oh, so your mom is Elizabeth Dawn Land. She was how old when she went missing?
Oh, she was 20s, like maybe 25.
Yeah, I think I saw one report, maybe 27, but you were a kid.
Yes, I was like 9 or 10, I believe.
Do you remember finding out that she was missing?
Yeah, I didn't find out until a few months later, simply because with her bad habits, she would occasionally go off the grid. But when it finally came to attention that, you know, she was in fact missing, I was notified by my father, and it was sad. It was very heartbreaking.
So with that, Katie, if I can ask you, because just so people know, you guys were living with your dad at the time?
Yes, I lived with my dad, and we were both living with his mom, so my grandma, at that time. So I would have visits occasionally with my mom, because I was not in her custody at that time. So yes, I only seen her a few times. I had actually My last visit with her was about three days or a week before she went missing.
What do you remember about that visit?
She looked super healthy, which was a good thing. She was glowing. She was ready to, you know, get herself some help, I believe, and, you know, have her kids back in her life fully. And so I remember that she looked very happy and healthy. It was a very good visit.
I like to see your smile when you think about her.
Yes. I was a mama's girl. I loved my mom, even with all her bad habits and the issues that she had. I mean, I loved my mom very much. I still very much do love her.
So it's been so many years now. She went missing in February 2009. What are the anniversary dates like for you? Do you still have hope that maybe she is alive, or in your heart, do you know that she has passed?
The anniversary date, they're difficult. They were getting better. But now, you know, I've graduated. I have two beautiful children of my own. Those kind of things that, like, it makes it hard on those anniversaries because she has missed out on all of this. Which is, you know, you need a mom in your life, which, I mean, I have plenty of motherly role models, but, you know, a mom is a mom. So it's the anniversaries can be very difficult with those events in my life.
So, Katie, they say that you don't realize what love is until you have a child. Has that been the case for you?
Yes. Being a mom is an amazing thing, and the love you have for your children is something that you can't really explain. I mean, I couldn't imagine not having my kids and not seeing them every day. And being a mom is an amazing thing.
So with that, Katie, too, can you tell us what's it like for you as the years go past? Is there a search effort still underway, or do you feel like your mom has been forgotten?
At first, you know, they did everything they could. But as the years passed, you know, it would get passed down to another detective and another detective. I think we're on like maybe the third detective that's been on her case. So with it being a 13, 14 year cold case at this point, I mean, I know they still occasionally check in with me, see how I'm doing. But when it comes to tips now, I don't think they dig as deep as they did the first 3 years of her disappearance.
I've talked to so many family members of victims, and it's the not knowing that can be the hardest. Is that the hardest thing for you? Is that why you're still trying to find your mom?
Yeah. I mean, I have my doubts that she is still alive. I mean, there was a time when I thought maybe she had gotten sucked into the human trafficking and, you know, was still out there. But lately there's been hearsay that, you know, she isn't alive anymore. So, I mean, I have some peace with that, knowing that, you know, she's not suffering for all these years, but it would be nice to be able to put her body at rest and be able to have, you know, a ceremony for everyone that has loved her and still does love her.
When you talk about your mom with your kids, what do you tell them about their grandma?
That she would have loved them and that she's watching over them. And once they're old enough, you know, I'll tell them more about her, but they're still so young at this point. They don't even really ask about a grandma. I mean, they have other grandmas. So, but once they get to that age and they start asking those questions, it'll be very nice to tell them about her.
When you see some of the stories that come out where they're using DNA now in some of this new technology, and they find people, or they're able to identify remains, does that give you hope?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's going to be easier if they come, you know, by a body that they can't identify, and that will make it so much easier to at least find out who it is and give that family closure.
As you've gotten older, you've lived with this. It's been a part of your life since you were a child. But now, as you're getting older and you're looking into it, what are you finding out? Is it frustrating? Because we know that streets talk, but what you hear is not always accurate.
Yeah, it can be very frustrating. I mean, being so young, I tried to do as much as I could, which wasn't much other than get on the news occasionally and be able to share my story. But now that I'm older, I feel like I could do a little bit more, just more of like pushing, like, come on, here's something, look into it. So that's kind of, I can do a little more, but I still, you know, I can't do that much because there are so many different stories on her disappearance and the case and everything. So it's very frustrating not knowing. And every little fact, you know, I try to get them to look into as much as possible.
Where was your mom last seen?
The first story, which I'm pretty sure is the legitimate one, is she was in Flint, went to a bar with a friend, and she never returned home. So that's the story. So I'm not sure. I mean, it could be true. It could not be true.
Right. I'm sure, though, she would be so proud of you.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, one of the reasons we are doing this again is to try to remind people that when they see the posters or they see a name on that list, missing persons list, that person has a family behind them, and bringing closure, or I don't even like that word closure, at least answers, give you answers.
Yeah.
You deserve that.
Yes, especially after, you know, the length of time.
Oh, well, Katie, anything maybe I didn't ask that you want to add or anything you want to share about your mom?
If, you know, you're out there and you're watching this and you have those answers, come forward. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, we hope someone does do that, because sometimes time helps give people the courage to come forward. And I so hope that you and your family get the answers that you so deserve.
Thank you.
Katie, thank you again for being with us.
Continue the conversation with your hosts, Alicia and Ronnie, on any of your favorite social media platforms.
It is now time to go off script and go behind the scenes. Ronnie, I have so many questions. So Liz's mom, Jeannie, it seems like she knows more. Seems like she knows something. Where is she now?
Well, the family definitely believes that she knows more, but what she knew, they will never know. It remains a secret because she died in 2015. She died, sadly, of an overdose.
Oh, no.
So another one of the pieces of this puzzle, the family members tell me that Jeannie took out a life insurance policy on Liz shortly before she went missing.
Oh,
but
no.
Since Liz's case is still a missing persons case, she wasn't able to collect on the life insurance policy prior to her death. Then here's another really odd observation, just because when we start looking into these cases, you kind of go down a rabbit hole.
Always.
And looking at Jeannie's obituary, one thing that it stated in the local newspaper, the County Press, it stated that Jeannie was preceded in death by her daughter. Well, legally, her daughter, Elizabeth Land, is still just a missing persons case because hasn't been declared dead.
Who wrote that obituary?
Well, and I think for them, you know, they know the chance of finding her mom alive is slim.
Yeah.
But it's another to have it put in black and white.
Right. Well, what about her stepfather, Michael McGoy?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about this guy. So I did reach out to him. I never heard back. I reached out to several members of the family. And there are so many family dynamics that go into play in some of these missing persons cases because, you know, you have to remember Jeannie and Michael just got married in 2003. So this is not a long-term relationship.
Right.
And for Katie and other members of her family and those that grew up with Liz, they didn't really know Michael or his side of the family so well. So One of the things, and this is just a theory, because if you remember in the interview, Katie mentioned the concerns that her mom possibly was a victim of human trafficking.
Right.
So one theory is that Liz's mom and stepdad owed money and they were possibly pimping her out.
Oh, no.
It's 100% speculation on their part, but there are some factors that go into that that would make you see where they could kind of come to that conclusion. You know, so I started running some of these criminal records, not just on those closest, but then the extended family members as well. And I discovered that the stepfather's nephew, Jamal, well, he's not really a nice guy, Alicia.
Tell me about him.
He's not only a convicted drug dealer, but he's also serving a federal sentence right now for sex trafficking. And
excuse me? Sex trafficking?
Yeah.
That hits a little close to home.
Right? Right? So again, it's speculation. And there is some... nothing to say that his lifestyle was connected to Liz's disappearance, but there is the connection there. And I have to say, you know me, I love documents.
Yes, you do.
So you get on PACER, and for those that don't know, when it comes to federal cases, the PACER system is the online document system. So you can,
Ronnie's online heaven.
I know, you know, but the criminal complaint on this guy reads like an episode out of Dateline. It's heartbreaking. Mm. And so he's serving a life sentence now. So you see where the family is saying, hey, there could be something to this.
I don't believe in coincidences, especially when it involves a missing or murdered family member or acquaintance. There's usually a little, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire to me. And I know detectives go down that road. And speaking of detectives, I know one of the first calls you would make would be to the Flint Police Department. What happened with them? What are they doing?
Zip.
What do you mean?
Nada. Nothing. And I'm not saying that they're not doing something, because you never know what's happening behind the scenes. But, you know, I reached out to people that I know in the Flint Police Department. So even went through some of my ATF sources because, you know, working for ATF, we had a very close relationship with members of the Flint PD. In fact, we had, you know, some of their officers were on our task force. But I really got nowhere. And when I put in my FOIA request, it came back denied because they say this is an ongoing investigation.
We need a button that's like, denied, because so often that happens on some of these cases. And you wonder if you have people like us. I mean, we want to look into this case. We're speaking with everybody that we can. We're trying to put clues together. It would help to have more of the story. And I think police documents help with that. Right.
And it's hard because I have been on the other side.
Yes.
I have
been. You were a denier at one time in your life.
Right. You know, I was the person saying, I'm sorry, we can't release that information. And you do know, because while some of these cases are long cases and they may not have that last piece of the puzzle, they can't always release the information. And by releasing that information, it could put a case in jeopardy. And that's what you don't want to happen. But I think what's so hard for the family is the lack of communication, because they got an odd tip recently from someone who knew Liz. And according to this tipster, they said that she was buried at a property in Lapeer County, the same property where the body of a 37-year-old, Amy Kagan, who was also missing from Flint, the same area, was discovered in 2016. Now, the ME determined she died of an overdose. And one person was convicted in the case, but not for her death, but for mutilation of the body and tampering with evidence.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a lot more questions about that. So she was found in a wooded area?
She was on the property.
But it was an overdose? And then he mutilated the body after she died?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, for people who don't know, there is a major problem in Flint, aside from the quality of the water, which is what has made national and international headlines. There's a missing women problem. There are so many missing women. And there at some point, I know both of us belong to the Facebook page Missing in Flint, and people are constantly sharing their stories. We know there's a drug problem in Flint also.
Right.
And sometimes that goes hand in hand. There are dangerous areas, and especially for women who are involved in sex work. You and I have spent several weekends in Flint looking into cases, and we see missing. I remember taking a video, remember when we were meeting, I took a video of a post near a streetlight, and it was just plastered with missing posters. It's just really sad. There's so many families waiting for answers.
I think the hard thing for so many of the families, if you have a loved one that kind of falls in that gray area of society, they are troubled and they're addicted to drugs or into prostitution. And usually those two go hand in hand. It's hard to really get the attention on their case.
Right.
And to say they're not invisible. Someone loves them. And for Katie, that's why she's continuing to do this, because she has put a face on it. She was a little girl.
Yeah. She just wants her mom.
You know, but now she's a mom of her, you know, in her own right. And she's taking this on to try to get the answers. Even if those answers lead back to, you know, her grandmother and, you know, I guess, would it be a step-grandfather?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
How you would really look at that. But, you know, and those are, you know, those are hard things for a family to face. But there are people that say that they do know what happened to her. And, you know, I could see if she did OD and someone freaked. And it seemed like, according to this tipster, this property is where people in the underground world of Flint connected to drug dealing, they go and they'll dump like guns and used in crimes and bodies and this, that, and the other. But we can't just go on there. It's private property.
Right.
It takes a search warrant. So the tip has been turned over to police. Nothing has happened. And the tipster won't come forward to police. So that makes it hard for law enforcement. They're not going to be able to get a search warrant off of that information unless that person comes to them with direct knowledge.
Wow. I mean, all you can do is hope that with time that we've had now, someone will come forward and be brave enough to say, I know what happened, and give this family some closure. She needs it. You know, it's really fractured her family. Up next, our true crime genius weighs in on this week's case.
It's time to get schooled by the teen sensation of true crime. Here's our resident boy genius with this week's sidebar.
Hi, my name is Ryan Custer. I'm an 18-year-old pre-law junior at the University of Texas at Dallas, and ever since I was 9 years old, I've been attending trials, reading through case files, and poring over hundreds of thousands of pages of police documents, all in the name of true crime. On today's episode of Sidebar, we're going to be discussing what exactly a cold case is. We've all heard of them. People who watch true crime, who are involved in the community, love to talk about them. But does anybody know what the true definition of a cold case is? And the answer is no. Every police department across the country is going to tell you something probably a little bit different about what a cold case constitutes. However, what is generally agreed upon is that it's a case that has run out of any viable leads and there are no investigatory angles to pursue. So what that means is there's not DNA testing to be done, there's not witnesses to be interviewed, and sometimes they're not even sure if a crime occurred. We see this happen a lot in missing persons cases. Because they are so difficult to solve, there's so little evidence to go off of, many departments categorize them as a cold case, put them in the filing cabinet, and lock them away. It almost always means they're not going to be investigated for a long time. Some police departments, like Houston, Texas, for example, will routinely go through cold case files and attempt to use modern DNA technology or other methods to try to increase the likelihood of solving it. And the National Institute of Justice has been instrumental in working with state and government agencies in an attempt to increase the availability of high-quality, newer DNA technology. In 2005, for example, the National Institute of Justice awarded a total of $14.2 million to 38 state and local agencies in order to try to run tests on existing cold case files. It truly is an important issue, and in the community, we're seeing a major push for investigatory agencies, police departments, DA's offices even, to continue to pursue leads in these cold cases, as technology has genuinely flourished in the past 5, 10, 15 years, even the past year. We're seeing incredible advancements in technology, and cold cases are becoming easier to solve. Take, for instance, the Golden State Killer. That was an incredible work of forensic science on a part of many, many people, from the police to the public to private organizations like 23andMe. So we're seeing DNA and the testing of it becoming intrinsically linked to cold cases. And in almost every case, there is something that can be tested, something that can be done that a viable lead can be formed out of. Well, all of that being said, I need to get back to a discussion board entry that's due in like an hour. I will see you guys on the next episode of Sidebar.
Before we say goodbye, we want to take a moment to remember Elizabeth Land. We hope that you are found and your family gets the answers they so deserve.
Hey, listeners, do you have questions, comments, or think you may have the key to solving this week's case? We want to hear from you. Find us at Crimecasters on your favorite social platforms. Together, we can heat up this cold case.